people who collect things are very passionate. They're very dogged. But when you talk about book collectors, they're really passionate and really dogged in their quest. In the new book, Rare Books Uncovered, expert on rare and antiquarian books, Rebecca Rigo-Berry recounts the stories of remarkable discoveries from the world of book collecting. She tells about the family whose discovery in their attic of Action Comics number one, the first appearance of Superman, saved their home from foreclosure, or the Salt Lake City bookseller who volunteered for a local fundraiser and came across a 500-year-old copy of the Nuremberg Chronicle. Rebecca Rigo-Berry is the editor of Fine Books and Collections magazine. She has written about books for preservation, American Libraries, as well as Publishers Weekly, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
The name of the book is Rare Books Uncovered, True Stories of Fantastic Finds and Unlikely Places. What got you on this subject?
Well, as you said, I'm the editor of a magazine called Fine Books and Collections. So, and I've been doing that for almost 7 years now. So I've been in touch with lots of collectors, lots of booksellers, librarians, and I've heard about the one that got away. You know, it's a tale that a lot of antiques collectors, any kind of collector has this kind of tale, you know?
Yes.
The one that got away.
The one that got away. And what do you think gets people into this mode of collection in the first place, especially when it comes to books?
Yeah, you know, I think people come at it from a couple of different places. Some people, I think, are born with this collector's instinct.
Yeah.
I feel like I was, but I actually didn't get to books until a little bit later in life. So when I was a kid, I would collect things like coins and stamps and rocks and have my little collections. And so I think for some people, that's innate. And I think for others, you come to it as a reader. You know, you become a reader, you start really enjoying books, really enjoying authors, and then it sort of develops or blossoms into something else. You know, oh, I'd like to have a first edition, or I'd like to have a copy that's signed, or I would like to have an artistic, beautiful copy of this book. So I think there's a couple of different ways you can come at it.
Does it have to do with... And I guess this varies, again, of whether it's ultimately for the collector, right? It doesn't have anything to do with an investment or money. It's wanting to own something.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, there are people out there who would say maybe they're collecting for investment purposes, but no bookseller will tell you that's a good idea because, you know, you really have to collect what you love. It has to be something that you
right.
want to have and keep around you. And with books, you know, as opposed to other things, they're not slab mounted. You know, they're not put somewhere where they're untouchable. They're on your shelf. So people are going to touch them. People are going to look at them. The condition is always a concern
with
books.
If you let them.
If you let them. Right?
I don't let them, but that's okay. So, but it's one of those things where you do feel that, because they're big. I mean, it's hard to have a book collection, often.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you do with them?
Well, I think if you're a collector, you don't really worry about that aspect of it. You just keep buying.
You don't. Your spouse does, but you don't.
Right, right. And, you know, I think most booksellers will tell you you have to focus, you know. So, and you might get to that point on your own where you say, well, this is the topic I want to collect, or this is the author I want to collect.
Yeah.
And everything else will start, you know, start winnowing away in a sense.
This is what I loved about the book. Well, actually, let me just go to a definitional question first, and that is, what makes a book rare? What in your looking at this and choosing the stories that you decided to tell, what makes a book rare?
It's such a hard question because, you know, so many people will say, well, if a book is old, oh, it's
yes.
rare. And it's really not the case. You could have a 500-year-old book and really it could be worth less than $100. It's just a matter of maybe the craftsmanship that went into it, how many survived, the condition that it's in, and also desirability. I mean, is it a first edition of Newton? You know, is it his most important book? Is it those kinds of things make a real difference. So, you know, age, people tend to think, oh, age, oh, here's an old thing.
Right.
But that has almost little to do with it.
And rare also, and you seem to go into this in the book, which is at least what I got out of the definition, is it's what many, many people would want, but there isn't that many of.
Mm, of course, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's yeah. what it is. So how did you come across these stories that you tell in the book?
Well, some of them, just have come to me in the last few years, you know, doing this magazine. You know, we've interviewed so many collectors and booksellers, and somebody will tell you, oh, I have this great story about a book I found. So some of them came to me that way. But also, when I knew I was going to be doing this book, I started putting out all these feelers out into the collecting world.
Yeah.
And just saying, has this ever happened to you? Has this happened to anybody you know? And actually, what's funny is since the book is published, I've probably received a dozen emails from people saying, hey, that happened to me, and here's my story, in case you're doing a volume two, you know? So I think a lot of people who've been doing this, you know, whether you're doing it as a collector or a bookseller, this happens.
I assume you collect.
Yeah.
And so do you have a story, you know, that kind of started all of this, that got you thinking?
Well, you know, it's funny. This actually did happen to me, but it was long before I had any interest in doing a book or long before I was even a collector, per se. I was in Lenox, Massachusetts. This was 1999. And my husband and I were sort of tooling around town. And we saw a church book sale, one of those kinds of things where there's huge bins of books outside and they're $1 each or 50 cents each. And I was sort of pawing through, and I found a copy of Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, which it was just a nice hardcover with a jacket. It kind of felt nice in my hands. It had, you know, a nice heft to it, good size. I don't really know at this point what it was about the book, but I thought, oh, Arthur Miller, you know, sure, I'll take this home and put it on my shelf and read it one day. And then, you know, it took me actually a few months before I pulled it off the shelf and realized that it was something really, really special. It's not only a first edition in its jacket, which is amazing enough alone, but that it had this press pass fall out of it, a little blue card stock thing. And it said William Shire, great World War II journalist, and had his name written on it on the Chicago Tribune. And it was for an Indian conference that he went to in London in 1931. He was kind of friendly with Gandhi, and he would go to these Indian conferences that were being held in London at the time. And so this was his press pass for one of those conferences, tucked inside Arthur Miller's book.
Which we assume he used as a bookmark.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's really cool. So you get two objects out of that.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, that was just my special thing, my special treasure, my story. But years would go by, you know, before I became really interested in collecting books and all the terminology and all the stuff that goes with that. So it's
the terminology is very confusing.
It is confusing. Yeah.
Too confusing.
And it's a little subjective.
Yes.
You know, fine, very fine, very good. You know, who's to say?
And the rule of thumb is that if you have an autographed copy of a book, that it's worth more if it's just autographed than it is if it's inscribed.
That's true, unless the person it's inscribed to is also famous, or if those two people, the author and the person it's inscribed to, had some kind of relationship, then that makes a difference.
Yeah. When you look at the stories that you tell in the book, I mentioned a couple of them. What are the ones that really stand out for you?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. So there's 52 stories in the book, and
they're all my children.
They are. You know, one I like to say is one of my favorites is mostly because it only happened last year. It happened in 2014, which, you know, a lot of people will say, this kind of thing never happens anymore. And so this story really says, yes, it does. There was this man in Philadelphia. He's a bookseller, librarian. He co-owns a coffee shop. You know, he kind of dabbles in books. And every weekend he goes to this flea market in Philadelphia. And he just, you know, tools around looking for books. He says, I'm not looking for a $100 book. I'm looking for a $20 book. You know, he'll pick them up and maybe he'll resell them. And he just got really lucky. He was kind of tooling around and looks down and he sees a copy of To Kill a Mockingbird. And at that point, he says to himself, I know what a first edition looks like. I've been around the block. I know what it looks like. And that kind of looks like one to me. Picks it up. Doesn't want to draw too much attention to himself, but sort of, you know, looks at it and thinks, you know what, I'm going to take this home and I'm going to see what happens. And he kind of bargains it down inadvertently from $4 to $3.33, buys a couple of other books, walks away, goes home, says he doesn't even touch it when he gets home because he's kind of afraid, you know, is it what I think it is? Or, but then after a few hours, he breaks out all the reference books he needs, and he finds out that he has just purchased, you know, a first edition of To Kill a Mockingbird for $3, basically.
Wow. Now, and you have a picture of the book in of To Kill a Mockingbird in your book. And the cover is intact. It has some gouges and scrapes and so forth, but it's a pretty handsome volume.
Yeah. And that's just, that's, some could say it's luck, or you could say it's wisdom, or, usually it's a combination of the two.
Yeah. Because I was much like you. I found a copy of, I was at a library book sale, and maybe about 8 years ago, and found a copy of Charlotte's Web, and which turned out to be, it was a discard from the library, but it turned out to be a first edition.
Wow.
It's a well-worn book, but it's really fun to have, and it's very cool. I want to get into some of the other stories in the book, but let me just turn the equation around for a moment. What if you're looking for something? For the person who is looking for a very specific thing, how do you uncover that rare book?
I guess if you're looking for a very specific thing, obviously booksellers, there's a lot of booksellers out there. And finding them is not terribly difficult. There's a lot of great search engines for books out there, like Abe Books and Biblio Books. And also there's book fairs that occur, around the country all year long.
Yeah.
And some of the bigger ones are New York, Boston, California, but there are smaller ones that occur every few weekends. There's some book fair going on, and these are really great events because you walk in and there's just all these booksellers with booths with some of their best material, and you just kind of go from one to the next, like window shopping, basically.
I want a first edition of Winnie the Pooh signed by A.A. Milne.
Okay.
And Ernest Shepherd, if I can.
Mm-hmm.
What are my chances?
I think, I don't know if your chances are great, but off the top of my head, I'd say there's a great bookseller in New York called Alphabet Books.
Yes.
Knows everything about children's books
them.
In the world.
Yeah, that's great.
And so I would say if you wanted that book badly, I'd call them up right away and say, this is what I want. Can you find it?
Now, here's one of the things, and there's two ways of looking at this, of what your books are worth. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then what it costs for you to buy them. And what I have found is that while we could look at them as expensive, but when you compare to other items, they really aren't, are they?
No. No. I mean, art, for example, if you're an art collector.
Tens of to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
Where a signed novel by Mario Puzo of a first edition of The Godfather could go for like $2,000 or something like that.
Yeah, a few thousand dollars, I would say.
So, but what does that tell us about this? Going back to my initial question about that has more to do with you wanting it than it has to do with you buying it for an investment.
Yeah. And I think for books, people just have a special pull, right?
Yeah.
You make a relationship with a book when you read it and you love it sometimes you feel like I just need to have that book. I need to have a book that's signed by that author. People love that idea that it's been touched by the author. This idea that they've touched it and now I can touch it. It's sort of an artifact, which is really interesting and cool to me. Or also for authors that go back several centuries, maybe you want to see the book as they saw it originally.
Yes.
I get to see the copy. I get to see Walden as Thoreau saw it. If I buy a first edition of Walden.
That's right. And then if you do have that copy that is signed, then to know that that was what they had seen and what was part of that moment of their publishing life, which is really cool. You have a story in the book called The Bard's Book, an epic eBay buy. How has eBay changed things? And tell us a little bit about that story.
Well, a lot of the booksellers I talk to, eBay has become the new, garage sale, so to speak.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of used bookstores around anymore. Estate sales, flea markets sometimes are hard to come by. And even when you do, books are not the number one thing available. So a lot of booksellers have told me eBay is one of the things they do now to scout, quote unquote scout for books. You put in a couple of search terms and sometimes what you get back is amazing. And in that case, there was a bookseller in New York City and he woke up one morning, he put his search terms, into eBay like he probably does every morning or every few days. And the result that came back, just for some reason, and again, is it metaphysical or whatever you want to call it? He looked at this result and thought, wait a minute, there's something poetic and interesting about what I'm seeing. And I'm willing to take a bet. You know, I'm willing to spend a few thousand dollars and see what what shows up on my doorstep, which is what happened. And for him, you know, he and another bookseller ended up spending years researching, trying to figure out whether or not this copy of this 16th century book was owned by William Shakespeare. They think it is.
Which obviously would be really cool.
Yeah. And worth a lot of money, but that's besides the point, I think.
Right. Well, often it is. Let me go back, and I apologize because I'm having a coughing fit here, but one of the things that I found, let's just go back to the story about To Kill a Mockingbird. Because it's one thing for a person to find that and realize, oh, for a book person to look down and say, oh, this is the first edition of To Kill a Mockingbird. It's another for a person whose life dream is to own a copy of a first edition of To Kill a Mockingbird. Those are different things,
mm-hmm.
aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be searching and searching and searching and then
right.
find it.
Right. And I think, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that kind of thing was nearly impossible. I mean, you'd have to scour bookstore after bookstore after
right.
bookstore. Whereas now, really, you could go online and chances are you'll be able to tap in that title and get what you want.
And may or may not, you know, pay for it.
Right.
Say, right.
All right.
One of the things about this book that I love is part of the subtitle is finding these books in unlikely places. And were you looking for that too? Well, where's the weirdest place where I can see where these things popped up?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, of course, people will say attics and barns. There's a great
yeah.
story in there about a barn find, which I just love. A guy walks into this barn and there's Fryhofer's bread, those big plastic trays that hold bread
yes.
stacked to the ceiling. And he's like, oh, you know, what a weird shelving system this is. But, you know, finds an incredible French folio that ends up being worth, I don't know, $75,000 or something. But yeah, that kind of story, or the one about the guy who's dumpster diving, basically, and finds this really fun history of automobiles in New York City. Not a book that's worth a lot in terms of money, but he finds it just the coolest book. It's full of all these black and white photos of New York City, basically with no cars on the streets, because it's when people are just learning how to use
right.
cars. And, you know, he found it in a dumpster.
Oh, Rebecca, the dump stories are great, aren't
yeah.
they? I mean, because I go to the transfer station. You see all the books there, but you find some cool stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, signed books get thrown away like you wouldn't believe because, you know, if you're trying to get rid of a whole chunk of books, you're not going to open up every single one of them to look and see if it's signed. You know, so, but a diligent scout or a collector, somebody who's looking for that kind of thing will.
And if I have books that are signed to me in my collection and that are just for me, do I tell my ancestors, you know, just please look at them before you throw them away when I'm dead?
Right. Exactly.
Just take a look.
Yeah. I know a guy, he's got thousands of books in his house, but the special ones are kept separately and sometimes with information about them.
I do that.
Because you're right. If
yeah.
you happen to go, you want people to know. Please don't send this to the church book sale.
I say everything is signed, everything is cataloged, everything is, but you don't know, you know, and then suddenly that's out of your hands, obviously, and you just don't want, like, a, you know, oh, niece and nephew, you could get a new house.
Right. Although I have a feeling that's how I ended up with my Arthur Miller, so maybe I should,
you know, that's
keep my
true.
Mouth shut.
That's true. Well, then that's part of it. We are more aware of what they're worth, right? We're more aware of what the possibilities are,
mm-hmm.
and that's exciting in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the name of the book is "Rare Books Uncovered: True Stories of Fantastic Finds in Unlikely Places." Rebecca Rigo-Berry is the author. This is a beautiful book. I mean, besides, it's a great book, but it's a beautifully packaged book as well.
Yeah, they did a great job.
You can judge a book by its cover. Rare Books Uncovered. Rebecca, thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Thank you.
It's a lot of fun talking to you.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.